Welcome to Hollywood, Minnesota, the show that looks at the links between the land of 10,000 lakes and the motion picture industry. This show aims to highlight the way cinema is a part of Minnesota's artistic and cultural heritage through interviews with local filmmakers and film festival coordinators, as well as profiles of Hollywood figures with Minnesota roots. On today's edition of Hollywood, Minnesota, I will be speaking to Carol McCormick of More Creative. Based in Minnesota, More Creative is a talent agency that represents performers and models for film and advertising projects. Okay, thank you, Carol, for joining me today. Why don't you begin by describing your company's interaction with filmmakers? How do clients end up on the film set?
If the film actually has money, sometimes we refer to that as a legitimate film, they will, 9 times out of 10, hire a casting director. So that is a role that is different than mine. There are 5 casting directors in the Twin Cities. They have all worked on film projects, and those casting directors will contact us. So that will be our first line of connection to the film project. They will send us a breakdown of what is being cast, and then we will start submitting our ideas for the different characters. And that begins to be sorted out. An audition is set up. Scripts are sent out. There will usually be 2 auditions at least for the actor before a final decision is made. And the whole process from start to finish might be 2 weeks to 3 weeks. I've seen it go as long as a month before filming starts. What your listeners might not know is that we have almost no contact at all with the director of the film. Our communication is first with the casting director, and then when the film starts shooting, we will have contact with producers, assistant directors, and production assistants. And that's another thing your listeners might not know about films is that it is a huge jigsaw puzzle of moving pieces, and even when an actor has accepted the role, they might not know exactly what time they're needed on set until the day before, sometimes even the night before. So it is a very uncertain world that you have to keep yourself available for these people, because the film directors, they don't care about your personal life. They just assume that you are keeping everything open for their requests. So it's very strange world from that standpoint. You get the call sheet the night before, then you finally find out the answers to your questions. So it's a little different world.
You've been working with More Creative over 30 years. What is it you're doing right now?
Oh, my goodness. I have recently finished working on a few films. There is one that there is quite a bit of buzz about. So your listeners might have heard about something called Dear White People. It was filmed on the University of Minnesota campus. It was a fast and furious casting and shoot. The whole thing was cast and done filming in 4 weeks' time. But the subject matter is so current and is so timely about race relations. And I just heard yesterday that it got accepted into the Sundance Festival.
Oh, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. And we have an actor who walked in there. We met him on a Monday. He auditioned on a Tuesday, and he got the lead in the film.
Oh, that's
first
very fast.
Movie he's ever done.
Wow. Does that happen quite often?
No. No, it doesn't. That was a delightful surprise. Usually the lead parts are already cast before they even get to us. With actors from L.A., and Minnesota is left to fill the smaller supporting roles. So the fact that there was even, you know, a lead that was still not cast, and that, you know, they chose an unknown with no film experience, very unusual.
There may be some listeners to this program who are looking for representation. What advice do you have for them?
Well, there's kind of two groups of talent out there. One group is the actors that have that, oh, I would call it the fire in the belly to do this work. They're determined, they're passionate, nothing gets in their way. And then there's a group of actors or talent that look at it as more of a really fun hobby. So the industry has room for both those types. And so I think the answer to that is to know what category you're in and then proceed accordingly. If you are the fire in the belly kind, then you are out there always working on your craft, always figuring out what your next project is going to be. You're a hustler. If nobody is hiring you, you find a way to hire yourself. You might start working on a show for the Fringe Festival, for example, where you're going to be showcased. You just really start creating your own work if nobody is offering it to you. If you're an actor who is in it for a little mad money, then, you know, you get pictures, resumes, you give it to agents, you wait for the phone to ring. And you don't worry about it. If the phone doesn't ring, that's fine. You've got other things to do. So it's really kind of knowing what you want out of it is a very important piece of the puzzle.
Do you accept solicitations from would-be performers, or do you go out looking for talent?
Yes, we do. We do both. We are very lucky at More Creative to have a reputation where actors and would-be models come to us. We do not have to advertise. And so, you know, every day in the mail, you know, there are submissions. Every day I get email submissions. So we accept both now. And so we don't have to do anything to solicit actors. It just happens. Now, I do see a lot of theater. My coworker does too. And if there is somebody that I see on stage that is talented and has a look that I know we need, I will give them my card. I will wait for them after the show is over. I will follow up with a note. You know, I will try to get those actors to come in. What I have found is that when it's my idea that they pursue work, I have much less success than if it is their idea. And so, you know, as much as I sometimes try to get somebody to come in to our office, they have to be motivated to do this work on their own. It has to be their idea. I have found over the years that, you know, works much better.
What do you look for in acting and modeling talent?
Well, for actors, I am really scrutinizing the resume. An actor who has MFA in acting will definitely get a phone call from me. Hardly even matters what they look like, because I respect the time and the effort that went into getting that education. BFA actors also will get calls. If you don't have an education, training, or background in acting, then I rely on whether or not you have a look that is pretty stellar for what we need. That does not have to be beautiful. I could be looking for a great character actor. And so if your picture reflects that, and you've got 3 community acting classes on your resume, I might call and ask to see you. So it really depends. But certainly a solid resume helps in the acting world. Now, for modeling, there's some pretty strict guidelines we go by for fashion modeling. Women should be 5'9", 5'10". They should be very, very slim, size 2. They should have great bone structure. But that's for fashion modeling. Men should be 6 feet, 6'1", be a 40 regular. Again, you know, good hair, good skin, good teeth. All those things matter. But then there's a whole category of print that we call lifestyle print. And again, really, really tiny petite people, you know, women who are 5 feet or less have challenges even with that type of modeling. But it is much more open to different looks. Basically, attractive and healthy is about all you need to pass muster for lifestyle print modeling. We're seeing people for that category every week, practically. We have interviews with people that just had, you know, a good look to be the receptionist, to be the clerk at the store, to be, you know, the banker. I mean, there's all kinds of roles in print media that we're trying to fill, and it does not have to be with fashion models.
So that rubric that you listed off that was for fashion models, is that something that's coming to you from the people who do the hiring?
That's not a standard we have set up for ourselves. You know, we've been in business 50 years, and so it's pretty easy to figure out what gets hired for what. So, and we do have clients, you know, Macy's, for example. You know, certainly if they're doing a runway show, they specifically need that tall, very, very slim figure. So we've just learned, you know, that there are standards in the fashion world. We did not set them up, but they still exist. And so if we don't have a selection of people that meet those requirements, they are not going to call us. They will call another agency.
More Creative also represents voiceover talent. What makes for a good voiceover candidate?
Well, the voiceover market is a tricky one. Everyone wants to do it. Everyone thinks they can do it. What we have found that people that ultimately are successful in voiceover, first of all, they have a lot of patience because it's not a field that you win quickly. But great actors with great breath control and the basic tool of an interesting and marketable sound is what will eventually get them noticed if they have the perseverance. Now, the reason why it's so difficult to break into is that producers are spending megabucks on engineering sessions and copywriters, and they are very reluctant to work with new talent. They get comfortable with the skills of a handful of reliable actors, and they have no compelling reason to use someone new. That is why it's so difficult to crack into the market.
Something I've noticed just from watching television, it seems like there's a lot more celebrity voices being used in commercials these days than in previous years. Is that true, or is that just my perception?
No, it is very true. Now, you're going to find that less in radio, but yes, watching TV commercials, you will notice a lot of celebrity voices. So how does, you know, a local person from Minneapolis, you know, compete with that? It is difficult. So I would say the majority of voiceover work that is available here in the Twin Cities is radio work and some industrial voiceover narration type work. But the opportunity to be on a national TV voiceover, it does not come up very often, and then it is extremely competitive.
You also represent children. What are some of the unique challenges to representing child performers?
Well, I would say that the number one problem with representing kids is not the children at all. They're delightful. It's parents that are overly involved and without perhaps really meaning to, they sort of wreck things for their children. They're micromanaging, they're living vicariously through their children. They were frustrated actors or models themselves in their youth, and it didn't work out for them, so now they want it, you know, they want it to work out for their own children. They don't deal with the rejection. It's kind of sad. I don't want to say that it happens frequently, but we've had some, you know, really talented kids in here, and after we've worked with the parents, which, of course, you know, that's what you do. You're making phone calls to the parents and giving them the information, and if they give you an attitude or are overly demanding, we just move on. We move on to a different child with parents that are easier to work with. So that is the biggest pitfall for kids.
If there's any one thing that the parent of a child actor should realize, what is it?
To let your child sort of guide you in a way. Did they want to do this? Are they enjoying the audition process? You know, if they're leaving in an audition in tears, if they are questioning their self-esteem, their worth, if they say to their parents, I don't want to go on that audition. I'd rather go to Johnny's house and play with Legos. I mean, that's, you know, that's a huge clue, mm-hmm. you know, to not be forcing your child into this industry unless they really want it for themselves. Not to make you happy. They have to want it for themselves. And I've seen parents march their kids off to modeling schools and pageants, and you know, they just seem to lose their imagination, and that is not what we're looking for.
One of the curious areas listed on the website is hand modeling.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find a hand model? What are you looking for in a good hand model?
Well, if we're doing our job well, we are doing a glance at everyone's hands when we are interviewing them. Because finding a hand model is extremely difficult. And you don't really know when somebody's going to, you know, be sitting there before you as an actor, but also happen to have beautiful hands. So the demands of that are that this is going to be a young person, 16 to 28. It's probably the prime age for hand modeling. They're going to have long fingers, you know, piano fingers. They're going to have a deep nail bed. They're going to have finer bones, probably be a small ring size, you know, 4, 4.5. They're going to have good dexterity. They won't have any scars, writer's bumps, large knuckles, and they're not going to have ruined their natural nails by putting fake or temporary nails on. So a lot of young women make that mistake, and that ruins the nails. We really don't have any clients that want to work with hand models that don't have natural nails. So it's few and far between can you find a good hand model. So if you do, that person easily can have quite a nice little career for a few years as a hand model. They make very good money.
Now, you've been with More Creative for over 30 years. How did you get involved with this company?
I was really just at the right place at the right time. You know, just the stars were in alignment, I guess you could say. My background was pretty perfect for this particular job with a psychology and theater background. And, there aren't very many openings for agents, but there's more than there used to be. There's more agencies in the Twin Cities than there used to be. There used to be just like four of us, and now there's easily 10. So, and there can be high turnover at some agencies. There isn't here at One Creative, but some agencies have high turnover. So, you know, if you just have an interest in this industry, but you don't, you know, want to actually be doing it yourself. Like, I love actors, but I don't want to get on stage myself, you know. So this was perfect for me. And I just actually just walked in the door when there was an opening. So there you go.
How has the business changed in the time that you've been involved?
Well, that's an interesting question that I put some thought into. And there has been three big changes in the 30 years I've been here. The first one is that there was a good run of about 15 years from, I would say, the early 80s to the mid-1990s, where there were many feature films done here. And all of that went away sort of gradually to other parts of the United States and Canada, because different regions of, you know, the United States, they would all go, well, what is this state doing that we're not? And it turns out to be tax incentives, tax breaks. So then it was like a bidding war. And, you know, we would be giving a tax break, but then Louisiana was giving a better tax break. And then Canada was giving even a better break. And so wherever it got cheaper to work, the films went. So that was sad to see that change so much. It was so much based on the budget rather than, you know, interesting locations and where could they find, you know, good crews. And those were the things that used to be important, and now it is budget, budget, budget. So that was a big change. And the second big change happened about 10 years ago when there was a long 9-month union strike. Because the Twin Cities used to be mostly a union town, meaning SAG and AFTRA. And that 9-month strike just killed the union market in the Twin Cities. Producers, directors, they discovered that there was a lot of actors that were non-union that were pretty dang good, and they got really good after working solid for 9 months. And they didn't go back. They did not go back to the union actors when the strike ended. So that was a horrendous change that put hundreds of union actors out of this business, actually. And it has not come back. We still have lots of business, but it is non-union for the most part, sadly. And the third change, of course, all has to do with the new media. And it used to be that we just had to, like, really understand TV commercials. And now it's internet, it's intranet, it's websites, it's YouTube, it's cinema use, it's jumbotrons. It's just a really, really diverse style of advertising now. And that just is a big change, and it's challenging. You know, you've got to keep up with it. Every day you're sort of reinventing the advertising world. So you have to be ready for whatever they're going to throw at you. So that has been a big change, too.
One last question. What does the Minnesota talent pool have to offer to filmmakers that is unique?
I would say the talent depth of the skill, it is every bit as good as what you're going to find in New York or L.A. or Chicago. And I still don't think, you know, Hollywood realizes that. You know, maybe we're not going to have, you know, 100 people that can play the role of the police sergeant, you know. Do you need 100 people to play that role? No, you do not. So the fact that there still, as of yet, has not been a TV series shooting here in Minneapolis is, well, it's just unbelievable to me. Chicago has 3 TV series, you know. So I think we are still underestimated as far as the skill of our actors here. They are really amazing. If you spend a weekend up here going to theater, your socks will be knocked off because they're so good.
That concludes this edition of Hollywood, Minnesota. Thank you to Carol McCormick of More Creative for joining me today. You can find out more about More Creative at the website moretalent.com. This program is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I'm Nathan Wardinsky, and be sure to join me next week for another edition of Hollywood, Minnesota.